Hi, I'm Julie Finn, and you're listening to Figuring It Out.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Figuring It Out, the podcast for millennial women starting online businesses, blogs, and podcasts. I'm Melissa Guller, head of special projects at Teachable and founder of The Kindling. And each week, I interview another amazing woman to learn more about her story, her challenges, and her best actionable tips. Everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Julie Finn. Julie is a business coach who helps professional women leverage their skills and experience in order to start and scale coaching and consulting businesses. Julie is also the host of the popular podcast, The Working Mother's Mentor. Julie honed her expertise in strategy and marketing roles at top-tier global companies, including the Coca-Cola Company, the Boston Consulting Group, The Walt Disney Company, and Deloitte. So Julie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Melissa. I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm so thrilled to have you. So to kick things off, I know we just read your bio and mentioned that you have quite a bit of background expertise working for these really top-tier companies. So how did you first get the idea to start a business of your own?
That's a great question. And I have to say, I think I've always been a bit of an entrepreneur. So I think most entrepreneurs will say that there's always been something in the back of their mind where they see an opportunity, a problem they want to solve. But I think for me, the real impetus to actually taking that leap and starting was having kids. What I found is that even working at some of the most progressive companies, that trying to integrate the work life that I had with the kind of family life that I wanted to have just didn't work, that I needed to have control over my own time. And so that was really the thing that kicked me out of corporate and made me realize that I wanted to chart my own path.
And what were some of the first things that you did?
Well, the first thing I did is what I call going on my journey of transformation, because honestly, I wasn't really sure what my business would look like. I knew about obviously the skills that I had and the education that I had, but I knew that if I wanted to create a business that I wanted to be passionate about it, that I wanted to care about the impact I was going to have. And so I went on retreats. I worked with business coaches. I took online courses. I read books. I even spent a week, I kind of laugh about this now, but it was really transformational for me. I spent a week in the mountains at a yoga retreat center for vegetarians, and I'm neither of those things. But what the point is that I didn't just take the leap from corporate, that I took the time to really go deep and to understand what it is I wanted to bring, who I wanted to help, how I wanted to help them, and really how I was going to integrate that all with my family life. And so during that journey, that's when I started to lay the foundation for what is now the Working Mother's Mentor.
And can you tell us a little bit more about what you do currently have? What are your businesses?
Absolutely. So the Working Mother's Mentor is a company that's got basically three things that we do. One is the podcast that you mentioned, the Working Mother's Mentor podcast, where I interview executives, authors, nonprofit leaders, and other change makers. And we really kind of peel back the curtain. My goal is for people to see how people with high achieving lives integrate that with their family life. So I want you to see the messiness and all, not just the big titles, but the struggles and some of the solutions. The second thing is I'm a business coach. And so I really love kind of jumping in there with women who are starting or scaling businesses as consultants or coaches and really helping them take it to the next level. And that's where I think my kind of traditional business experience really makes a massive difference for them. And then third, I do some work with corporations. So I'm a keynote speaker, a conference speaker. I do some facilitation. So kind of all three are under that heading of the Working Mother's Mentor.
And in terms of the business, I'm sure it's grown over time. So when you were first getting started, were you doing all three of these, or what did the evolution look like?
So for me, and I'll tell you, it's kind of backwards from what a lot of other coaches would tell you to do. I actually started with the podcast. And obviously a podcast is not necessarily a money maker. It's a money taker. As you know, it takes money to create a professional quality podcast. But for me, because I was really coming from a place of service, and I felt fortunate to have access to some really interesting and senior level people, that I thought, wouldn't it be great if other people, particularly people early in their careers, could hear some of these conversations that we have to understand that, yes, that person is in the C-suite or has a SVP title, But, you know, their kid didn't have a healthy dinner last night either. They had bean burritos. Like, I wanted people to be able to hear that. So I started with the podcast really because I wanted to get those stories and those conversations out there.
And how has your podcast evolved over time?
So what started as pretty much corporate focused has evolved to include women and men. I talk to people not only in the corporate sector, but a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of authors, because I love the expertise that authors often bring to the table. And I think what it's really become, it's bigger than just being a working mom. A lot of my listeners don't have kids. A lot of my listeners never will have kids. It's really evolved more into how do you have a life that you create on your own terms while integrating it with your family life. So sometimes it's about how do you take care of yourself? Sometimes it's about confidence. Sometimes it's about taking care of aging parents or your own health challenges. But it's really about how do you bring your whole self and show up in the world the way that you want to. So it's really evolved into being something bigger than what I envisioned in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm sure in the beginning, you never could have imagined what it came to be currently.
Absolutely not. Right. So even if you look at the list of guests, because I'm at episode like 55 now, I think if you look at the first sort of 10 or 15, they're all women, all corporate, all sort of similar types of backgrounds. And if you then look going forward, you'll see that there's a massive diversity of guests from the, you know, executive producer and showrunner for Marvel's Luke Cage to the CFO of Square, you know, very different people. One's a man, one's a woman, one's black, one's white, you know, just very different people, very diverse stories and voices. But it's really about kind of, again, peeling back that curtain into the lives of very successful people and helping you understand where they failed, where they stumbled, where they would have done things differently, because I'm trying to help people who are in their 20s and 30s sort of see that picture so that they can then inform the decisions that they make today.
Mm-hmm. And these sound like some pretty big names you have on your podcast. So how are you able to get these kinds of guests?
That's a great question. You know what I think has been so humbling through this experience is that people have been so generous in opening up their lives and sharing their stories. Some people I've known through my previous experience, either through my universities or through my work experience. Some people have been a friend of a friend. And then believe it or not, some people I've just cold called, cold emailed or sent something on LinkedIn. And not everyone I've asked has said yes, but the vast majority have. And again, I feel like people have been so amazingly generous with their time because obviously I don't compensate them. They're really just wanting to share their expertise and hoping that they can shine a light on someone else's path. So it's really been such a humbling and also inspiring experience for me as the host.
Yeah, I've had the same experience where I expected finding guests to be one of the bigger challenges of podcasting. But it has been, like you said, very humbling to realize that a lot of people are thrilled, flattered even, to be asked to come onto a podcast or have a message and really enjoy the opportunity to speak to a new audience. So finding guests has actually been one of, dare I say, the easier parts of podcasting for me, at least. I'm curious, though, to hear what have been maybe either some surprises about podcasting or some challenges that you've faced.
Well, one of the challenges, but I think now that I'm kind of in the podcast community, I understand that this is not unique. You know, I live in an urban environment, meaning that there are a lot of ambient sounds around me. Yes. And so what I've had to do is create a podcast, quote unquote, studio in my office, or as my friend calls it, my cloffice. So it's my closet and studio and office all wrapped into one. And so that's been an interesting challenge. You know, even now I'm sitting here surrounded by, you know, shoes and clothes, and I stare at a wall instead of out of a window because there, you know, there's construction and there seems to always be a leaf blower and a truck. And so I had to learn how to make do. That's been the one thing that I think has been particularly interesting to me and surprising to me. I think the other thing, and I don't know if this has been your experience, in my experience, it's actually a lot more work than I think people realize, particularly if you want to create a professional show and if you do a lot of the work yourself. So I too have an editor, but I still am very hands-on in the development of the episodes, in choosing and interviewing the guest, and all of the post-production. I'm still very hands-on. So it's a lot more time-consuming than I think a lot of people would recognize for, you know, a 30 or 45-minute episode.
Could not agree more. On average, how much time do you think it takes to produce one episode of your show?
I think luckily I have gotten more efficient over time and I've learned to do things like batch the process. But I would say, you know, an estimate is still probably, you know, at least 5 hours an episode, because I do go through with a fine tooth comb and I pull out things that I want to change. I make the show notes. I pull out quotes. I pull out different sound bites for audiograms. And so I probably spend, I would guess, probably at least 5 hours per kind of 45 minute episode.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially like you're mentioning post-production elements, things like having show notes to put up on a site, audiograms, the little social media share files that have the sound wave, things like pulling quotes. That takes so much time. It's kind of like when I do laundry, I think I have time to run the washer and the dryer, but forget about the folding.
Right.
That's how podcasting feels to me, where I forget at times how much it takes to do the marketing aspect of podcasting.
You know what? I love that analogy because I have three kids and that's exactly right. Like doing the laundry actually isn't that time consuming just to kind of sort and put it in. It's all the post-production. It's the folding, yes, and the little bit of ironing. That takes, you know, five times as much time as actually doing the laundry.
And for whatever reason, I've not yet added that time into my brain in the, you know, the department of how long I think it takes to do laundry. I always forget.
Or you could be like some people and you just pull your clean clothes out of the laundry basket as you get dressed. I'm not there because there are five people in my household, so we can't do that. But I have been known to do that in my past life.
Listen, I think you can do it sometimes, but I don't think you can get away with it every time.
No.
But yes, I, to sum up, couldn't agree more that podcasting is a huge, huge amount of work, especially when I compare it to writing a blog post, mm-hmm, where you're not going to get quite the same information in a podcast as you would in a blog post. But for some people, they are equally valuable. They're ways to consume information and to learn. Mm-hmm. And a podcast takes at least five times as long, mm-hmm, at least for me, as a blog post.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Okay. So I've loved talking more about your podcast, but I also want to talk about your coaching. So when you started off, how did you find some of your early clients?
Well, you know, it's funny. I really didn't want to do it this way, but every coach I ever spoke to said, this is the way you do it. And that is asking for referrals. And I really had to do that kind of kicking and screaming. Like, it's just a personality trait of mine. Like, I'm the kind of person who before Uber and Lyft wouldn't ask people for rides to the airport. Like, I don't like to ask people for things. And so I certainly didn't want to ask people to refer their friends or colleagues to me. So what happened was I have a coach. I think all coaches should have a coach who basically forced me to just send an email to my kind of safe, you know, inner circle of people and sort of let people know what I'm doing. This idea that you can build something and people will just find you is a myth, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of started the ball rolling. So my first clients actually came through word of mouth, sometimes interestingly as well, because they knew someone who was a guest on the podcast. So they heard the interview. So it was really people inside kind of my second or third tier of my circle were where I got my first clients.
And once you have those first clients, what does the coaching experience with you look like?
One of the things that I think is a little bit unique about me, and this is part of the reason why I call myself the Working Mother's Mentor, is I am somewhere between a coach and a trainer, meaning that kind of traditional coaching, and obviously there's multiple modalities, but traditional coaching, a coach is really trying to pull the answers out of you with the belief that you already know what you should be doing. You just have some blocks or some reason why you won't do it. For me, the way I work with clients, because I'm a business coach and because we are usually working on creating a business from scratch or scaling a business that already exists, there's actually a good part of the coaching experience that's training. So like a course would do, I actually have training materials. They're bespoke. So I create things specifically for each client, but we work through an actual process. Like there's an end goal in mind as we're working through our engagement. So it's a little bit different than traditional coaching. Again, that's why I call myself a mentor, because I'm drawing on my corporate experience, my business experience, I went to business school, you know, my education. I'm drawing on all of that and helping my clients develop and scale businesses. So it's a little bit different than maybe your traditional coaching approach.
So when you have these clients and they're hoping to grow businesses of their own, do you have any examples of some exercises that you've found helpful, or maybe even just some common challenges that many of your clients are facing?
You know what I have found to be remarkably consistent, whether someone is trying to launch a business, grow a business, or even stay in a corporate career but up level. And this is going to sound woo-woo, and I know it's such a buzzword right now, but what you think about what's possible and what you think about yourself is so true. And what I have found is that entrepreneurship will kind of put a big mirror in front of you, and every fear, every insecurity, everything that you ever worried about will come up. And so no matter what type of engagement I'm working with a client on, every single, I mean, literally hands down, every single person, we've had to do work early in the engagement around mindset. And I just think that for a lot of us, particularly those of us coming from a very traditional corporate background, mindset can seem kind of extraneous, like it doesn't seem like it's a core to being a successful entrepreneur. But I can tell you in my experience, it's absolutely true that if you don't have the ability to see yourself as an entrepreneur, to understand your value and your worth, to have the confidence to ask to be paid. So a lot of, I find heart-centered entrepreneurs, they want to serve, but they don't want to ask for money. And there's something, a lot of people have blocks around money. And so there's always this upfront piece that we have to do around mindset. I have not had one client yet where that has not been an issue.
And when you're working with these clients, are there any examples of maybe thoughts that might be coming up that people listening could start to notice at mindsets that they might need to be shifting?
That's a great question. So I think if you're talking specifically about entrepreneurs, because I know that's a lot of your listeners, what I have often found is that one's ability to charge is related to one's sense of self-worth. And I find a lot of people, particularly entrepreneurs in their early stages, have these questions come up, like, why would somebody listen to me? Or am I really an expert? Or why should I be up front on stage telling people what I know? Because I have 3 years of experience. You know, there are a lot of these doubts where we start to question ourselves in a way that's different from being an employee. I think for a lot of people, when they work for someone else, they're kind of, because they have a title and because they're connected to a company or an organization and they have a specific set of roles and responsibilities, most people can find the confidence to say, okay, I'm good at this. I've been doing this role. I'm a marketing manager. I'm an accountant, whatever. They find the confidence around that because it's a very sort of constructed role for them. But when you're an entrepreneur and you have to do that construction, and when the company is you, when the brand is you, one of the things you have to do first is really stand in your power and understand your value. And I find a lot of people can say that, but they don't actually do it. And when you push on this, then sometimes we even have to go back to childhood. You know, a lot of issues around sort of self-worth and self-confidence usually bubble to the surface.
I've never thought of it before, too, where you mentioned working at a company where you have the title and the constructed role for you. It really is like a fallback where you can mm-hmm. say, oh, because this company gave me this position, mm-hmm. I must have worth. It's a way to validate that the work that you're doing means something because you can say, oh, X employer says I can do this. Mm-hmm. But when the business is you, it becomes much harder because who am I to say that I should be doing this business at all? Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, it's not the first thing we think of, but when you really kind of process it, and I'm not going to say that every single entrepreneur on the planet goes through this. I can say that every single entrepreneur that I've worked with goes through this. I can say that I've gone through this, that particularly when you have worked in a bigger organization and you've had that title. And I find a lot of my clients are coming from an environment where they had, you know, good titles. They were managers, senior managers, directors, vice presidents. Walking away from that starts to strip away some of their identity. And I think sometimes we don't recognize how much of our identity is tied to the names on our LinkedIn profile or our resume. And when you have to strip that away and all that's left is you, the individual, there's usually some work that has to be done there.
That's really interesting, that concept of stripping away the identity, which... Mm-hmm. Makes me wonder, why do you think these people who are coming to you want to start their own business at all? What are some of the common motivators?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question because it makes it sound like, oh my gosh, why would you ever leave the warm cocoon of corporate or a huge nonprofit or wherever you're coming from? I find there are a handful of reasons. One is most people want to have control over their time. So it's not just about, and I often tell this story about when I dropped to part-time that it wasn't the silver bullet that I was looking for, because ultimately it was about control over my time. It wasn't just about the number of hours a week. So a lot of people come to me often because they have kids or something else going on in their lives where there's this pressure that happens, and they recognize that they're smart people, they want to work, they want to have impact in the world, but they want to have control over their time. They also usually want to have more control over their financial destiny. So a lot of people in corporate roles sort of get this sense that there's a cap or a limit. So they've hit six figures or low multiple six figures, and they kind of get this sense that they're on this train, but they can see this station, like they can see that it ends, that they're never going to break a certain ceiling. And so a lot of people want to feel like they have more control over their financial destinies. I also think there's an alignment piece. So thirdly, a lot of people like their jobs, have good jobs. And all three of these resonated with me personally, like their jobs, but they're not super enthusiastic. So a lot of my career was built around consumer product strategy. And there were certainly a lot of aspects about each job that I enjoyed and excelled at. But at the end of the day, what I really care about are people, particularly women, finding their way in the world, standing in their power and having massive impact. And so the alignment piece, a lot of people feel that their jobs don't allow them to be their whole selves, to bring their authentic selves to work and to do work that they're really passionate about. So I'd say those are three of the main reasons that people come to me. It's around the control over their time, control over their financial freedom, and wanting to create meaningful work that's more aligned with who they are as an individual.
I love that. I think that's such a useful list of those three things for listeners to consider, where it is a big leap to consider starting something up on your own. Now, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing.
Right.
We talk often about, you know, start small, start a blog, a podcast, start something that you can just kind of test the waters. But I think it's really telling that you mentioned that a lot of women have the motivation of, I have a family now, or I need to find a better way to control my time, because that is a major difference, I would say, is when it's your own business. On the plus, it is your own time, you can set your hours, but on the downside, I often feel this overwhelm where my business is exactly as large as I put my time into it to be. So there's this, oh, I should always be doing more feeling on the opposite end of the spectrum.
I think that's a really important point. And I will say that's something I struggled with at the beginning. I always, you know, I would kind of jokingly say that my to-do list was way longer than what was possible in a day. And this is one of the things I've really had to shift, because the mistake a lot of early stage entrepreneurs make, myself included, is that they basically recreate a situation that they were trying to escape. So if the goal is to have more flexibility in your time, to have more time to do other things, you leave corporate and then create a business where basically you're working harder and have less flexibility, then you haven't really solved your problem, at least if that was part of the impetus for starting a business. And so one of the things that I've had to learn to do, and one of the things I work closely with my clients on, is efficiency. So that's why you heard me say earlier when I was talking about the podcast, I've learned to be more efficient. I've learned to batch the processes that I do. I've also learned that realistically, you can't do 12 things in a day. Pick your three top goals and stop switching. I think the mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make is because there's so many things that we want to get done, that you might spend an hour, at least this is how I was, I'd spend an hour editing a podcast, and then I'd spend half an hour replying to emails, and then I would do some social posts, and then I'd do some strategizing, and then I would have a client call. Like, I was switching. And what I've learned to do is I block. Right. So I have a sort of certain blocks on certain days when I do certain types of tasks. So that I have podcast days where I do a lot of things all related to podcast, or I have client days where I do a lot of things all related to clients. And so what I think the mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make is because we do have very long to-do lists, because a lot of us, particularly in the early stages, are doing a lot ourselves. But learning to say, you know what, there are probably three bigger objectives I can get done today. Let me block my day in a way that allows me to do that so that I'm actually more efficient, because that switching cost, when you're switching from task to task, is actually a massive leak in your efficiency. And so these are some of the lessons I've learned over time, particularly as a working mom, because my day is limited by the hours of my kids' schooling and after school activities and things like that. So I've had to learn to be massively more efficient than I was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so I'm curious to hear, before we wrap, what are some of the challenges now that you've kind of gotten through some of the early phases? What are you dealing with now in your business that is challenging for you?
Well, it was interesting. As a working parent who is trying to be more present with my kids, you know, that was one of the reasons that I started my business, is I actually had to learn that I can't do 100% of what I want to do. And it's interesting. I had a conversation with another working mom podcaster over the summer about this, and we both kind of recognized that 70% is going to have to be okay. And that was sort of a painful lesson for me. I had to say the pace at which I'm going to be able to grow my business, the number of clients with whom I'm going to be able to work, the number of podcast episodes I'm going to be able to release are all going to be limited by my personal capacity. And so one of the things I've had to do is, one, be okay with 70% and not 100 or 110%, which is what I wanted to do. Two, I had to be okay with slowing down. So for example, for the first time since I launched my podcast, for the past 4 weeks, I released what I call encore episodes. Some of the early episodes I re-released, and I just let myself exhale. And I really fought doing that. I'm really committed to releasing a new episode every Tuesday. I felt kind of guilty. I know that there are people sort of waiting for it to drop into their player. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to be better if I exhale a little bit and just give myself the space. So I had to learn to do that. And I think three, what I originally tried to do was have enough childcare set up so that I could still work a 10-hour day. And I realized that I wasn't actually solving for what I was trying to solve for. So another lesson I had to learn is that I'm crafting a life that I want. And this is something I say, but I wasn't doing a great job of doing myself, on my own terms. And my own terms mean that at 2:30, I have to do a school run. For most days of the week, that's what that means. And I've had to be okay with that. And I kind of did that, honestly, kicking and screaming at first. I was like, oh, you know, I really want to keep working. I really want to keep working because I'm so enjoying and excited about what I'm doing. But I've really just had to learn to slow down. And that's been the hardest lesson, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. I think that what you said about 70% has to be good enough really resonates with anybody who wants to have some semblance of balance in your life, because we're so ambitious and we have these big ideas in our minds. But as entrepreneurs, it's always, I think, going to feel like you're not doing as much as you hope, but you have to find a way to let go of the perfectionism or the biggest possible version and just go with the version that is the good enough, which is not the mentality a lot of us started off with, I don't think.
No, and I have to say, you know, another kind of bigger revelation that I've had more recently is that I've had to kind of exhale and be okay with just being myself. So coming from a corporate background, I think a lot of us kind of put on a little bit of a mask. You know, there's like this professional way that we do things, and a professional way you write a document or do a presentation. And while I will always have that training, and I will always be probably a little bit of a perfectionist, like I don't like typos and grammar mistakes, and that, you know, there are always going to be those things that are going to be important to me, I've had to learn to just be authentic, messiness and all, just like what I'm asking my guest on the podcast to do, I've had to do. So whereas in the past, there are things that maybe I would have scripted before I recorded, now I just talk. Whereas in the past, I would have been really concerned about, you know, whether or not something was aligned perfectly or the picture was perfect, now I just let it go. And so that, again, has been a real lesson for me in just kind of being authentic, and that the people who want to work with me resonate with the whole of who I am, not just kind of the image that one may think that they need to put out to look professional.
I think that's a great point, that people don't necessarily feel connected to a woman who seems to be perfect. Mm-hmm. They feel connected to a woman who feels real. So I want, hopefully, to encourage people to feel like they can bring an authentic self forward and just know that that will attract the kinds of people that they would want to be around anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Authenticity is definitely key.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to do, I think, especially in the world of social media, which at least for me does not come naturally to represent myself on the internet. So it feels hard to be authentic because, first of all, I'm awkward. I don't know what I'm doing. But second of all, you still have to feel comfortable sharing. So there's so much to balance, I think, when it comes to portraying yourself online these days.
I couldn't agree more. And I think there's this extra layer with kids where you're trying to protect them. But then as the working mother's mentor, obviously a lot of what people want to understand from me is how I integrate that. But then how do I do that without wanting, you know, I don't say where my kids go to school or things like that. So there's always this balance. And I agree with you, you know, in my sort of my natural tendency, believe it or not, a lot of people think I'm an introvert. And so my natural tendency is not to sort of share everything I do and what I had for lunch, you know, that kind of thing on the internet. And so it has been a bit of a challenge to understand the importance of sharing more about who I am and how I construct my life with my audience.
I totally hear you on that. If I could hermit and never go on social media, I think I'd be a happy woman. But I understand that it's not an option for me. Well, Julie, it's been such a pleasure. But before we go, I want to know what's next for you. What are some of your big goals coming up?
Well, thank you, Melissa. Well, one of the things I'm launching in a couple of months is a group program, because what I have found is that I love working one-on-one with clients, but there's definitely a power and an energy that comes from a small group. And everything I do is, you know, pretty high level. So it's not for the faint of heart. I push my clients. We like to get work done, but I like to have really smart women sort of supporting each other. So I've got a group program launching in January. If anyone has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. You can find me on my website, theworkingmothersmentor.com, and I'm happy to set up time to chat with you. But that's one of the things I'm most excited about that I'm working on now. Obviously, I've got lots of new podcast episodes that I'm working on. I had that breather. So this week, I started releasing new episodes again. So I'm excited about that. And then just continuing to grow the business. I've got some speaking engagements coming up that I'm excited about. So just a lot going on. But the new thing that I'm really looking forward to launching is the group program.
That's so exciting. Can't wait to hear how it goes. And again, if people want to keep in touch, is your website the best place to go, or where should I send everybody?
Yeah, that would be great. So you can go to www.theworkingmothersmentor.com. You can also find me personally, Julie Finn, on LinkedIn. And feel free to shoot me an email. I'm happy to hop on the phone with you and learn more about your business. It's julie@theworkingmothersmentor.com. And any other questions, feel free to let me know.
Thank you for joining us this week. You can find links to Julie's website and LinkedIn account in the show notes at figuringitoutpodcast.com. I also have a quick favor to ask before we go. If you enjoyed this week's episode, and I know I did, I'd love to ask you for a 5-star review on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts. Reviews really help us let iTunes know that people are enjoying the show, which helps us reach more great listeners like you. So I can't thank you enough in advance. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode with Julie Finn. I'm Melissa Goller, and you've been listening to Figuring It Out. See you next week.